appear. Underneath the skin, an empty space to fill in. Well, there's so many sinking, now you gotta keep thinking you can make it through these waves. Acid, booze, and ass, needles, guns, and grass, lots of laughs.
Let us awaken together, beloved community, roused by the sun's song at the windowsill. If you have come here seeking light, may it pour in like butterscotch, warming every corner of your being. If you've come here seeking color, may rainbows dance upon your walls, painting our spirits in blue, red, green, and gold. If you've come here seeking nourishment, may our words and blessings be like milk and toast to your soul. And you who are seeking community, won't you stay? Let's put on this day and talk in present tenses. Let's worship this Chelsea morning of spirit and song. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our Sunday services here at Dublin Unitarian Church on St. Stephen's Green. Whether you're here with us in the sanctuary, joining us live online, or tuning in later via the website, we're so glad to share this time with you. My name is Jennifer Buller, and the church has been my spiritual home for about 15 years now. We have an open pulpit here, a tradition that brings a diversity of voices and perspectives to our worship. Today, it's my honor to add my voice and the voice of Joni Mitchell to this list. Now we light our chalice, a ritual practiced by Unitarians everywhere as a symbol of our shared search for the light in the world. Let us light this chalice in remembrance of the markers that trace our lives between the cradle and the stone. As this flame rises, wax rolling down like tears, may the light warm our hope and hold us in our hopelessness. We are stardust, particles of change orbiting the sun, and we gather by this flame, seeking our way back to the garden. For our first hymn this morning, we have Morning Has Broken. It's very special to me because I played it on the piano for church when I was 12. So I have great memories of the song and the collective effervescence that I felt when I played it. So in that spirit, hymn number 38, Morning Has Broken. Our reader today is our very own musical genius, Josh Johnston.
Thank you, Jennifer. I have had a reading in mind for years and years and years and years and years. Because this is it. Because this poem, Second Coming by W.B. Yeats, gets read an enormous number of times at this church, and it's much loved. And because every single time, anytime anyone's read it, I've met up with them down in coffee and I've said, but have you ever heard Joni Mitchell's version of that poem? And they go, well, no. And I might, sometimes I send it and sometimes I forget to send it, whatever. So I've been thinking about this every single time, and I was going to read Second Coming by W.B. Yeats, and then I thought, no, let's let Joni read it to you in her adaptation of it. So she recorded it in 1991 on an album called Night Ride Home. And then about 12, 13 years later, she recorded an orchestral album of rearrangements of her own songs and somehow managed to make this song even better. So she's called it Slouching Towards Bethlehem.
Within the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart. The center cannot hold, and the blood-dimmed tide is loosed upon the world. Sacred. The ceremony sinks. Innocence is drowned in anarchy. The best lack conviction. Given some time to think. And the worst are full of passion without mercy. Has finally taken form. For what is this rough beast? Its hour come at last. Slouching toward Bethlehem to be born. Slouching toward Bethlehem to be born. Shadows that straddle and strafe and struggle in the darkness, troubling my eyes. Shaped like a lion, it has the head of a man with a gaze and and pitiless as the sun, and it's moving its slow thighs across the desert sands, through dark and indignant Surely it's a second coming and the wrath has finally taken form. Oh, for what is this rough beast? It's our come at last. Slouching toward Bethlehem to be born. Slouching toward Bethlehem to be born. Of a lion. It's got the shape of a lion, raging and raging. It rises from the deep, opening its eyes. After 20 centuries, vexed to a nightmare, out of a stony sleep, by a rocking cradle by the Sea of Galilee. Surely some revelation is at hand. Surely it's the second coming and the wrath has finally taken form. For what is this rough beast? It's our come at last. Slouching toward Bethlehem to be born. Slouching toward Bethlehem to be born.
Thank you, Josh. That was beautiful. It made me think of my early experiences sitting around with friends listening to her album. So thank you for that. I know we have at least one child in the congregation. I've seen her dancing during the song, so I love that. But if it's okay with you, I'm going to stay up here to do that. That'll spare us the technical difficulties of trying to make the microphone work. So our children's story today comes from the Buddhist tradition. It's a once upon a time story, as Bridget always says. And it was the inspiration behind Joni Mitchell's song, Moon at the Window. Once upon a time, there was a Buddhist monk named Ryokan who lived all alone at the foot of the Himalayas. Being a monk isn't an easy job in the Zen tradition or in the Christian tradition. The monks have to take a vow of poverty, which means they can't buy anything ever, and they have to beg for their food and for their clothes. So Ryokan was very, very poor. He lived in a cobbled together kind of hut at the foot of the highest mountain range in the world. And the only thing he owned was a tatty old blanket. One cold night, a thief crept in while he was asleep, hoping to find something worth stealing. Instead, he froze in his tracks. There was almost nothing in the hut except for Ryo. When the monk woke to find him there, he didn't shout or get angry. He simply smiled and said, "I'm sorry I have so little. Please take my blanket. It's the only thing I own." Then he handed the thief his blanket and stood there with nothing on at all. The thief was speechless. He tried to refuse. "But you'll freeze. Take it back." Ryokan laughed softly. "No, my friend. I imagine your line of work takes you to the houses of rich, important people with beautiful things. So by coming here tonight, you've made my home into a palace. Giving you the blanket is the least I could do. Deeply moved, the thief took the blanket and ran off into the night, his heart forever changed by the experience. Ryokan sat back down on his dirt floor, looked out his window, and there was the moon, bigger and brighter than ever. And to think that he might have missed it if the thief hadn't woken him up. Overjoyed, Ryokan wrote a little three-line poem called a haiku. Left behind by the thief, the moon in my window. Decades later, Joni Mitchell echoed that moment in her song, Moon at the Window. Sometimes the light can be so hard to find, at least the moon at my window, the thieves left that behind. This story reminds us that you don't need a lot of things to make you happy or even to make you generous. And some things that do make you happy, like the sight of a big, beautiful moon, can never be taken away, not even by a thief. For our second hymn, I've chosen a song that I feel embodies Joni Mitchell's spirit, her activist and never give up resolve. There's nothing that's ever been able to keep Joni from singing, not even an aneurysm. So in that spirit, let's sing together hymn number 108, My Life Flows On in Endless Song. For my reading today, we turn to the German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. He's an unconventional and provocative thinker that really inspired Joni from a very young age. When she was in seventh grade, her teacher, Mr. Kratzman, handed her back a poetry assignment that she did, covered in red marks, kept saying cliche, cliche, cliche. And at the top, he wrote, "You must learn to write in blood." That comes from Nietzsche's Thus Spake Zarathustra, and it so inspired her that she dedicated her first album to Mr. Kratzman and named one of her favorite cats Nietzsche. So this is an excerpt from the chapter on reading and writing from Thus Spake Zarathustra in my own modified translation. Extra points if you can spot connections to Joni's songs. Of all that is written, I love only what a man writes in blood. Write in blood, and you will realize that blood is the true spirit. It's not easy to understand the blood of another. I hate lazy, casual readers. The more you know your readers, the less you'll be able to do for them. Another century of readers, and the spirit itself will stink. The fact that everyone can now learn to read will eventually ruin not only writing, but also thinking. Once the spirit was only God, then it became humanity, and now it's even becoming the mob. He who writes in blood and aphorisms, or for our purposes, song lyrics, doesn't want to be read, but to be learned by heart. In a mountain range, the shortest distance is from peak to peak. But for that, you need very long legs. Aphorisms and songs should be like the peaks, addressed to only the tallest of humanity. I'm finding it hard to relate to you people. This cloud I see below me, this blackness and heaviness, I laugh in the face of it. But you see it as a looming storm. You gaze upwards so as to be exalted. I gaze down because I am exalted. Which of you can laugh and be exalted at the same time? It's true we love life, but not because we're used to living, but because we're used to loving. Sure, there's always a little madness in love, but there's always a little reason in madness. And even to someone who enjoys life like me, butterflies and soap bubbles and the people who most resemble them seem to know more about happiness. Seeing these light, foolish, delicate, agile little souls fluttering about moves Zarathustra to tears and songs. The only God I would believe in would be one who could dance. And when I saw my devil, I found him serious, thorough, deep, solemn, the very spirit of heaviness through which all things fail. It's not with anger that one kills, but with laughter. Come, let's kill the spirit of heaviness. I learned to walk, and ever since I have let myself run. I learned to fly, and ever since I have stopped waiting for a push before I take off and soar. Now I am light, now I fly, now I see myself beneath me, now a god is dancing through me. Thus spake Zarathustra. Okay, for our moment of silence and reflection, we start with a prayer from the Lakota Sioux. Joni wrote a song for the tribe in 1988 and protested with them at Mount Rushmore against the illegal taking of their land. After the prayer, we'll have a brief pause for reflection, which will be brought to a close by the choir with a special anthem. Let us pray. Grandfather Great Spirit, all over the world, the faces of living ones are alike. With tenderness, they have come up from the ground. Look upon your children that they may face the winds and walk the good road to the day of quiet. Grandfather Great Spirit, fill us with the light. Give us the strength to understand and the eyes to see. Teach us to walk the soft earth as relatives to all that live. that was great. Thanks, Josh. Thanks, the choir. One of my favorites. You might be wondering what theology and Joni Mitchell have in common. Like all questions of faith, it begins with a longing, a search for truths beyond one's own understanding. For me, that search first became real in my grandmother's library. As a child, I would watch her reading in a pool of lamplight, a leather-bound Bible in her lap, with pages so thin you could see through them, and letters so tiny she needed a magnifying glass. "You'll always find the answers you need in here," she told me, "no matter what the question." So, did that make the Bible like the magic eight ball? I hoped it had better answers than "my sources say no" and "signs point to yes." There were Christian comic books on my nightstand, stories about Ruth and Boaz, Moses and the basket, Jesus in the tomb. I never missed a Sunday school class, and youth group was often the highlight of my preteen week. But as the seasons went round and round, the more illusions I recall. If God is love, as the bumper stickers say, then why threaten us with the eternal flames of hell? And what is this obsession with sexual morality, especially when there were leaders on the national stage and at some of my youth retreats who were clearly not practicing what they preached? Then came AIDS and trickle-down economics, proof that the so-called moral majority was anything but. I mean, didn't Jesus heal the lepers and bless the poor? When I went to college at 17, I was lucky to be on a big campus, about 12,000 undergraduates. That gave me enough cover to try on different personalities for size, to question everything, and to search for the truth, unless, of course, that truth was to be found in an actual classroom. Like Mark Twain, I didn't allow schooling to get in the way of my education. I searched in the pages of books, Meister Eckhart, Carlos Castaneda, Maya Angelou. I looked on the sawdust floors of the frat houses. It wasn't there, I'm here to tell you. On the trails of the Blue Ridge Mountains, on stage performing obscure German dramas. There were new alternative bands playing on campus radio, as well as new to me classic rock and folk. 17 years of Broadway tunes, classical piano, patriotic hymns, and mainstream 80s pop left me blissfully unaware of the transgressive counterculture. I mean, I knew who the Beatles were and who David Bowie was, but I had never heard of the Grateful Dead or the Velvet Underground. And in one particularly humiliating experience at a dive bar in Charlottesville, I told the guitarist that his songwriting was inspired, only to find out he'd been playing Van Morrison covers the whole night. So I say all this to give you an idea of my state of mind when my girlfriend turned me on to Joni Mitchell. The album Blue was my first taste of this blonde bombshell with a wind chime laugh and a poison dart pen. I fell into the sinking sand of her back catalog and never quite made it out. Her lyrics, and I know I'm not alone, seemed to speak directly to me. I felt seen in a way that was quasi-religious, like she was trespassing on my soul. But let's back up a minute. Who is Joni Mitchell? Indulge me as I run through a few of her milestones. Born with the sun in Scorpio in 1943, Joni was a freckle-faced tomboy on the Canadian prairie who got polio at 9 and had to learn to walk again. An outgoing teenager who learned to play the ukulele so she could play Kingston Trio songs at the Wiener Roast. An art school dropout who started gigging at folk clubs so she didn't have to tell her parents she was pregnant. A 23-year-old divorcee, David Crosby, used to trot out at people's parties just to see the jaws drop when she performed. A songwriter who defined the Woodstock generation but didn't even play the gig. A woman who had love affairs with the greatest artists of her time and paid the price. Rolling Stone magazine in 1971 published a flowchart of the folk and rock scene and connected her with, you know, David Crosby and James Taylor with little kissy mouths. So they didn't do that to Mick Jagger, I'm just telling you. A hermit hiding out on the Canadian coast when the roller coaster of the music business made her blue. An LA transplant who never missed an opportunity to rail against the star maker machinery. A canary in the ecological coal mine way before her time. And a musical pioneer, always the critically acclaimed bridesmaid, but never the top 40 bride. She's a consummate performer still today, making music and drawing crowds at 81. If you haven't seen it, the Newport Folk Festival 2022, her revival, it's worth a watch. That brings us back to the question, what does Joni Mitchell have to do with theology? For someone who grew up with all the moral absolutes and certainties of organized religion, it was revelatory, if not to say reassuring, to find someone so at ease with her doubt. Joni identified with biblical outsiders like Job and Zacchaeus. She admitted to being frightened by the devil, but drawn to those who aren't afraid. And she may not have agreed with her contemporaries that hell's the hippest way to go, but she was going to take a look around first. I saw myself in this woman who still went to her knees but wondered where the prayers had to go, with heaven full of astronauts and the Lord on death row. So Joni didn't exactly replace religion for me, nor did she drive me away from it. But when I couldn't find the answers I was looking for in the pages of dusty books, in the pews of a church, at the bottom of a solo cup, or in the arms of another sweet-talking ladies' man, Joni gave me something to believe in. This is still true today. After lapsing in my Mitchellist faith during my 40s, because not everyone, you'll be surprised to hear, enjoys her music, there are even some who shall remain nameless that refer to her three-octave vocal gymnastics as wailing. But now, empty-nested and armed with AirPods, I have found my way back to her music and to her theology. That's what makes her so unique, isn't it? Her music is just as powerful for a woman on the far side of midlife as it is for newcomers to the carousel of time. Maybe even more so now that we no longer have moons in our eyes. But what is it about her message that resonates? What is the gospel according to Joni Mitchell? Which probably would have been a better title for the address. Four key themes I've boiled it down to. The first is the sacrament of confession. Joni put everything out there, warts and all. Her passion, her jealousy, her beauty, her pettiness, her anger, and her dreams. She never felt the need to apologize for containing multitudes. I think we forget how revolutionary it was to sing with such raw honesty. These days, popular figures like Annie Lamott, Glennon Doyle, Hannah Gadsby, and even Taylor Swift celebrate the messiness of their lives with anyone who will listen. But Joni was a pioneer in confessional art. There was a humor in it, a self-effacing quality that didn't make you roll your eyes. According to Joni, it started as a defense mechanism, a knee-jerk response to fame. You want to worship me? Then you should probably know who you're putting up on that pedestal. But instead of demystifying her as a person, these songs, like all good art, held up a mirror to us, implored us to want what we want, love who we love, own up to our mistakes and eccentricities, and maybe even rant a little once in a while. In the Gospel according to Joni, the sacrament of confession is not about punishing you. It's about making your flawed self a more hospitable home. And in turn, encouraging others to embrace their own imperfections. The second theme deals with the rites of pilgrimage and retreat. Reading the news in a Paris park, romancing Carrie on a Grecian isle, crisscrossing the country on a self-styled hegira. There's no question that traveling was a powerful muse for Joni Mitchell. She found inspiration on the road, imagery and anecdotes with hidden universal meaning that made her songs into parables. But she also understood the magnetic force of home. She knew that rest and seclusion could fill your creative tank like nothing else. You can't help but long for home when Joni sings California, no matter where you are. And when the success of the album Blue sent her into a spiral, she retreated to Canada's Sunshine Coast. Healing came with living alone in a cottage without electricity, skinny dipping under the waterfalls and springing from the boulders like a mama lion. In the gospel, according to Joni, these outward and inward journeys are sacred rites held in tender balance, two halves of a potent antidepressant, neither complete without the other. The third theme is the call to stewardship and activism. Coming of age in the 1960s, Joni Mitchell experienced her share of protests and protest songs. But there are few songwriters of any generation who can shine a light on injustice with such wit and passion. Her battles become our battles. How can we stop the parking lots from paving over paradise? How can we sit quietly at a banquet where some get the gravy, some get the gristle, some get the marrow bone, and some get nothing, though there's plenty to spare? The list goes on. Vets with PTSD, so-called fallen women imprisoned in the Magdalene laundries. That song was 1994, very early. Abused children in foster homes, AIDS victims, corporate greed. Joni Mitchell never shied away from an opportunity to sing truth to power. For all the navel-gazing and romanticizing she's famous for, the gospel according to Joni reminds us that caring for God's creation and giving voice to the voiceless is our highest calling. The final of our four themes is perhaps Joni's most enduring, certainly for me. It wrestles with the forever dilemma of freedom. If there's one question that persists across her entire catalog, it is this. Can you live a life of creative and personal freedom and still participate in society? Still enjoy professional success? Still find a love that sticks around? When she watches a busker in the song For Free, Joni craves a purer form of her art. Nobody stopped to hear him, though he played so sweet and high. They knew he had never been on their TV, so they passed his music by. How long, she wonders, in the classic tune Free Man in Paris, can a person go from cafe to cabaret, feeling unfettered and alive, before they get sucked back into reality's cogs and wheels? But for Joni, there is no dilemma quite like the dilemma of love. Is it an engine or an obstacle for creative expression and ambition? In the tune Help Me, falling in love again is not necessarily a cause for celebration. She and her man love our lovin', but not like we love our freedom. Why do we always fall into the trap, she describes in the song All I Want? I hate you some, I love you some, I love you when I forget about me. It seems pretty clear that the line she repeats over and over at the end of that song, I want to make you feel free, is more likely an invocation for someone else to make her feel free. Of life's most existential questions, this is one of the sticky ones that defies answering. In the gospel according to Joni, it becomes kind of a litany repeated through the generations, a Zen koan that especially women of heart and mind everywhere return to. In closing, let me just say how grateful I am for Joni Mitchell's music, for peeling the scales from my eyes, for being my gateway drug to Unitarianism. Here, I found a spiritual home where everything is legitimate in your search for the truth, just the way it was for Joni. Buddhism and the Bible, LSD and love affairs, activism and arcane forms of music, poetry and philosophy. They all hold fragments of the answers we seek. Joni Mitchell is no messiah, but she has, for many of us, become a prophet, a fellow pilgrim out on the lonely road. Divinely inspired and deliciously human, her songs form a scripture that has never failed me, but also never fails to challenge me. May you also find in her songs a psalm for your own journey, questions and hearts open, voices unafraid. Amen. We'll now have our third hymn, followed by the collection. This is based on chapter 13 of Paul's first letter to the Corinthians. Joni also set this scripture to music on the album Wild Things Run Fast. She calls it the most instructive piece of writing as to what love is and what it isn't that she's ever heard. Hymn number 34.
just before our love got lost, you said, I am as constant as a northern star. And I said, constantly in the darkness, where's that at? If you want me, I'll be in the bar. On the back of a cartoon coaster, in the blue TV screen light, I drew a map of Canada. Touching souls, surely you touch my anchor, heart you pours out of me in these lines from time to time. Oh, you're in my blood like holy wine, it tastes so bitter and so sweet, oh.
Notices. Fair trade tea and coffee are served downstairs after the service. Please join us, especially if you're a visitor. Our open pulpit remains open, and we need more volunteers to lead services over the coming months. And if I can do it, anybody can do it. The slots on the 6th and the 20th of July are currently open. Speak to Gavin to sign up. And don't worry if you don't have a title for an address or an idea. You have plenty of time to work with that, and Gavin will get in touch with you closer to the date. Sundays at 2 is a new initiative here at the church. It's led by the Classical Musicians Network, who meet here in the church, and it's organized by Sherry. The first hour-long concert is today at 2 p.m. Tickets are free, but any donations you wish to make will go towards our restoration fund. For more information, please talk to Sherry. Pamela McCarthy leads our weekly service of reflection in the church every Wednesday from 1:05 to 1:35. You can also access these sessions live on our webcam. This month, the book club is reading When Things Come to Light by our own Liz McManus. They'll meet this Wednesday, May 28th, in the vestry. Please talk to Allison for any more details. The next Unitarian walk will be a loop walk from Blessington to Rustboro House on Saturday, May the 31st. The group meets at the Avon Activity Center at 10:30, and the walk will take about 4 hours. You can find more details in the weekly email from Elaine. And an announcement that the plant sale that we held in the Damer Hall last Sunday raised 718 euros for Christian Aid. Many thanks to Bridget and Paul for providing the plants, and to Allison, Trish, and the team for setting up the hall, and to everyone who made purchases on the day. Thank you. And finally, my sincere thanks to everyone who helped me put together today's service. Pamela and Gavin gave me some tips on structuring it. Josh, obviously, with his great hymnal inspiration and the songs that he chose for today. And the choir, amazing. To Ayla for her help in all things technical. And to my friend Manjula, who's watching, thank you for your help as well. If anyone's interested, JoniMitchell.com is, I think, the best artist website I've ever seen of any artist ever. It has all of her songs, all of the lyrics. It has every article that's ever been written about her. It has the flow chart from 1971, if you're interested to see that. So I can say, you know, check that out if you're interested in more information about Joni. Now for our final hymn, we have hymn number 151, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. I let Joni Mitchell's people know that I was doing this today, so I'm not sure if she's here with us on the webcam, but I know she's here with us in spirit, so let's sing this with and for Joni, hymn 151. And now our closing words, taken from My Best to You, a classic cowboy song that Joni Mitchell covered on her album Taming the Tiger. So here's to you. May your dreams come true. May old Father Time never be unkind. Remember this. Each new day is a kiss sent from up above with an angel's love. So here's to you. May your skies be blue and your love blessed. That's my best to you.
Up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. Charge the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, or leave me the birds and the bees. Go, that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. I said, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. up a parking lot.
Choo-ba-ba-ba-ba.
The TV with us
put up a parking lot.